Please be seated.
Good morning. Let me add my welcome to that of others. Glad you're here. It's good to be gathered together to worship, to be reminded of who God is, to be together on a morning. You know, we live in a divisive world. There's all these different opinions and things, and people fight about them. So I figured it's time to just get it out in the open, all right? How many of you would consider yourself to be cat lovers instead of dog lovers? All right, now we know. Look around. We did this exercise on the men's retreat where we had these statements and you had to identify with them. And of all the statements we said, that was the one that got the most boos. I mean, there were like three sad-looking guys that came in the middle of the room and the whole group. I know. I mean, if you're one of those guys, I mean, the men's retreat is probably not the place for you. So you should maybe find another, you know, place to connect with people like you. I normally consider myself more of a dog person, but I have to tell the story of this cat that fell into the hearts of our family. My daughter recently got this kitten and named her Mira. And this kitten was the cutest thing on earth and stole all of our hearts. I mean, she was playful and she would kind of nibble on you and play with the toys and jump. And it's like she would like transport from one place to another. You wouldn't even see her move. It's an amazing little thing, and she was just fun, and really, all of our family just fell in love with this little kitten. We were training her to be an outdoor cat. The purpose behind the cat was very practical. We wanted her to be our rat eater. So we were training her to be outside, and we let her spend a few hours outside at a time, and then one afternoon, she was outside, and she didn't come back. And so that night, we thought, oh, well, you know, she's not back, but she'll probably be back in the morning. So we went to bed, and morning came, and there was no Mira. We kind of went looking for her. We thought maybe she'd gone to the apartment complex. We walked around the neighborhood. It was a little bit desperate, actually. We're kind of calling her name, looking around, looking in corners, and there's no Mira. One day turned to 2 days, turned to 3 days, and Mira never returned. And it just surprised me how hard this was for me. This little kitten that we'd lost. And I would come home, and I still, you know, 3 or 4 days later, I'd walk around, and I think maybe I saw her, but it wasn't her. And she had this basket by the front door that she would sit in, and I would come home, and I would think, oh, she'll probably be there. Or kind of imagine in my mind that I would see her, and then she wasn't there. And so it surprised me just the level of loss I felt over this kitten. But I also thought over and over, what if this was my child, or my spouse, or another loved one? And I know some of you have experienced that. And just how deep the pain is of somebody who used to be there, but is no longer. And you think maybe you'll see them, and you imagine encountering them, but you never do. And it just reminded me of how much hard stuff there is in the world, how much suffering, how much grief and pain, and how we need to figure out how to walk through that and how to do that together. Last week, Dan kicked off our new series in the book of Job that we are calling Shattered, because we meet this man whose life falls apart, shattered into pieces. And we watch him go through things that we couldn't even imagine experiencing. Some of you might feel like your life has been shattered. Some of you are facing things that are incredibly difficult. Just this morning, I was praying again through some of the prayer cards that you submitted a few months ago for our retreat, and just thinking how hard, how heavy some of the things that we face in this world are. What do we do with that? How do we mourn well? As we watch Job this morning, we're going to see him in this monologue pouring out his pain. And we're going to see him go through three distinct phases of his grief. But through each phase, there's going to be a common theme, and that is simply wishing that what had happened had never happened. We're going to find Job doing what we often do when we go through hard stuff. He's going to be wishing the past away. Now, last week, Dan suggested that one of the biggest purposes of this book, one of the things we get out of it, is a reformation of how we view God, that we will encounter God in a new way. And I think that's really helpful. This book is not about how to suffer. It's not about why we suffer. It's not answering questions. It's showing us who God is in the midst of some of the harshest realities of life. That is what we need to understand. That is what we need, in fact, to suffer well. But I want us to keep in mind that we're going to be seeing Job this morning in the depths of his pain. And I want us to have a healthy respect for that. We're going to make some observations about the way Job suffers, but our point is not to criticize him. Imagine if after you went through what Job went through, how you reacted were written down for everybody thousands of years later to read. This is a privilege to see into Job's heart in this, the most raw of situations. And we want to encounter that with kind of a holy reverence, grateful for this man's model, but also to say, what can we learn and how can Job's example be an example for us? So I want to suggest that Job's example can be kind of like a roadmap, that it can show us some of the things that we are likely to feel and encounter when we experience suffering. I think a lot of us read a story like this and we see where Job gets to. We hear about this depth of relationship with God that he gets to, and we say, how can I get there without going through this? Is there a shortcut that I can take? And maybe if I study Job, I can learn the lessons he learned without having to go through what he went through. And I can kind of come out the easy way. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but there's no easy way. Job experiences what he experiences and gets to where he gets because of the journey he makes. And so as we face our own suffering, we can see Job's path as a guide when we follow a similar journey. Because of that, I want to pray and just ask God to be active in us this morning, to ask the Spirit to be sensitive to us and gentle with us as he brings up some hard things. So let me ask God's power as we look at this story. Father, we're grateful that you love us, that you give us guides to go through hard things in life. And we're really grateful for this story of Job, for the gift that it is to see a man in such pain and to hear his heart. I pray that your Spirit would be sensitive to us in our hearts this morning as we process this, and that you would be guiding us so that we might experience what it is you want for us. We ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen. We're going to be looking at all of Job chapter 3 today. And if that sounds like a lot, you can look in your bulletins and see next week Dan is going to deal with chapters 4 through 27. So, just be grateful that I'm only having one chapter this morning. And good luck to Dan. It's a long chapter that we're facing, but I'm going to read all of it over the course of the morning because I want us to really get in Job's mindset. So we're going to start with the first 10 verses. This is Job 3, 1 through 10. It begins after this, and of course the after this, if you weren't here last week, was Job losing absolutely everything. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And Job said, "Let the day perish on which I was born, and the night that said a man is conceived. Let that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor light shine upon it. Let gloom and deep darkness claim it. Let clouds dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. That night, let thick darkness seize it. Let it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. Behold, let that night be barren. Let no joyful cry enter it. Let those curse it who curse the day, who are ready to rouse up Leviathan. Let the stars of its dawn be dark. Let it hope for light but have none, nor see the eyelids of the morning, because it did not shut the doors of my mother's womb, nor hide trouble from my eyes." You know, because of our tendency to just plan out a series and put it on a calendar. Sometimes we get awkward moments where we preach about things that don't fit the day. As I started studying this, I just gave thanks that we're not studying this on Mother's Day. So, you know, sometimes it works out that we don't have those things. So gratefully that didn't happen. But this is an intense passage. This is heavy. Job curses the day of his birth, and then for good measure, he curses the night he was conceived. He wants to erase any possibility of his existence. And at first, when we read this, we might think, but last week we heard about Job responding to suffering in such a great way. Twice we were told Job did not sin with his words, and we saw him as a model. After he lost everything, he was so composed. How could this be the same person? But remember, the Bible is not a storybook, and Job is not a character. Job is a person. And this strikes me as very realistic, that a man in one moment could be so noble, and in the next could face such darkness. This is real life, and this is true to my experience, and I'm sure it's true to some of yours. That being said, most of us haven't cursed the days of our birth. It's not something we tend to do, but from a biblical sense, this is a little bit more common. Jeremiah said something similar in verses chapter 20, verse 14, where he said, "Cursed be the day on which I was born. The day when my mother bore me, let it not be blessed." In fact, I even found a list online of 10 verses about regretting your birth. You know, so looking for a good Hallmark card, you can go to one of these lists. Like, 10 verses about regretting your birth. You know, there's lists of everything online. But once we realize, I think, what Job was saying and what he was getting at, I think we'll relate with it a little bit better. I think we'll understand what he was doing. Because notice that Job's language is very evocative of creation. If you think about it compared to the story in Genesis, the story in Genesis has God bringing light from darkness, God bringing order to chaos. And here we hear Job wishing for darkness, wishing for things to fall apart. He's calling forth chaos out of an ordered world. And in a sense, what he's doing is wishing for an uncreation. Even the reference to Leviathan. Leviathan was a creature, was considered a creature of chaos, uncontrollable, that no one could tame. Some commentators call Job's curse a chaos incantation. Job is asking that the creation be undone. But not just creation in general, he's asking for his specific creation, the creation of his life, that would be removed. Now, in the first pages of Genesis, we see God creating, and we recognize that God's creation happens in a moment, but it's also not simply there, that God creates all through the scriptures. God is constantly creating. He is constantly writing the story of creation throughout the scriptures. And so for Job to wish for creation to be undone is for him to wish that his story had not happened, for him to wish away the details of the story that God was writing for him. And while we may not curse the day of our birth, I think we sometimes find ourselves doing the same thing, wishing that parts of our story weren't true, that they hadn't happened, that we had made different choices, that different things had happened to us. I notice within myself that even though on the one hand I am grateful, authentically blessed by God with so many things, at the same time, I feel discontent. I think back over things and wish those things hadn't happened. I think what my life would have been like if I'd made different choices. And parts of my story I wish hadn't been there. And yet, when we see Job with the extremity of this language, we realize that what he's doing is wishing away this creation that God has done. And so while we can be sympathetic to him, I think we can also recognize that that place is not the place we want to be. And we can hope for Job that he might get to a deeper place. He might get to a place where he could appreciate the story that God has written for him. And we might hope that we could get there too. That we could get to a place where we can accept our story. Here's how Dallas Willard describes that deeper place. We will never have the easy, unhesitating love of God that makes obedience to Jesus our natural response unless we are absolutely sure that it is good for us to be and to be who we are. This means we must have no doubt that the path appointed for us by when and where and to whom we were born is good, and that nothing irredeemable has happened to us or can happen to us on our way to our destiny in God's full world. Think about those words. It is good for us to be and to be who we are. I suspect that some of us have a hard time believing that. I suspect that some of us, like Job, sometimes wonder if it is good for us to be, and certainly if it's good for us to be who we are. We live in a culture that exacerbates that, a culture of competition and comparison, where there are so many examples of other people that are doing better than us, and we look around and it looks like everybody's life is put together and everybody's financially stable and relationally stable and everybody has it all except for me. I remember a billboard in our area from a few years ago that said, with thousands of jobs out there, one of them has to be better than yours. And it just taps into that sense within us that it might be good for them to be them, but I'm not sure it's good for me to be me. And yet, knowing what we know and believing what we believe that God is writing our story. We believe that God is the author of who we are. And so let me tell you, because we need to hear it said to us, that it is good for you to be. And it is good for you to be you. God has written your story. He is writing the path that you are going down. And no matter how hard it is, no matter how many doubts you have about whether it's good for you to be you, that is true. And to acknowledge that, to give thanks for who you are is a kind of worship, because you are acknowledging God's creative work in your life. And you are worshiping the one who made you. It is good for you to be you. This is what believing in the sovereignty of God leads us to, believing that God cannot be thwarted, that his purposes are good and that he is in control. We have to agree with Dallas Willard that nothing irredeemable has happened or ever can happen to us that will derail God's good plans in our lives. That is what it means to believe in a God who is all-powerful and good. And yet, like Job, we suffer and we go through seasons where it is hard to see that. So how do we do that? How do we accept those parts of our stories, the parts that are harder than we could imagine? Well, as Job continues, he changes a little bit. He begins with this curse invoking upon the day of his birth, and then he changes to wishing that he had died upon birth. So now he's glad he was born. He just wishes he'd died right away. So it's pretty similar, but it's a little bit of a shift. So let's read what he has to say about this and look for some repeated language that he uses. This is Job 3:11 through 23. Why did I not die at birth, come out of the womb and expire? Why did the knees receive me, or why the breasts that I should nurse? For then I would have lain down and been quiet. I would have slept. Then I would have been at rest with kings and counselors of the earth who rebuilt ruins for themselves, or with princes who had gold or filled their houses with silver? Or why was I not as a hidden stillborn child, as infants who never see the light? There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest. There the prisoners are at ease together. They hear not the voice of the taskmaster. The small and the greater there, and the slave is free from his master. Why is light given to him who is in misery, and life to the bitter in soul, who long for death but it comes not, and dig for it more than for hidden treasures, who rejoices exceedingly and are glad when they find the grave? Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? Some dramatic music. This is great. You probably noticed that there was one word that was repeated throughout this lament. We didn't plan this, I promise. It's the question that most of us have asked when we suffer. It's a common question when things get hard. Jesus even asked it when he was on the cross. It's one simple word, why? Why? Why all these things? Now, most questions are a request for information. What's your name? What do you do? How do I get from here to there? We're looking for something. We're looking for some data to respond. But this question is different. This question is not looking for an answer. It's simply expressing the depths of our confusion and lostness. David Kessler is an author who's written several books on grief, and he says, in all my decades of working with those in grief, no one has ever said, yes, I'm so satisfied with these answers. It's just not what people are looking for. We don't need answers. Job's friends, this is what Dan will deal with next week over 23 chapters, will spend a lot of time giving him answers that are supremely unhelpful. Because he's not looking for information. He's looking to express something. So if you're ever lucky enough to be on the receiving end of someone in pain asking you why, know that they aren't looking for an answer. They're not looking for you to explain what has happened to them or to give them reasons for it. They're looking for you to receive their cry, to listen to where they're at. Because something happens when we give voice to it, when we give voice to that pain. For Job, his pain is so intense, what he's experiencing is so devastating that he wishes he had never existed so that he could skip it. You hear in his voice, he's tired and he's weary. He longs for rest and for sleep, even if it means giving up his entire life to have peace instead of what he's facing. A few weeks ago, we had our men's retreat, and after the whole cat question debacle, we went for a run the next morning, and I hurt my toe in the middle of my run, the middle toe of my right foot, which is not a part of my body that I usually think about at all. But over the course of that weekend, it was an amazing weekend. And yes, this is a shameless plug for the men's retreat. Even if you love cats, you should come. Fantastic weekend. We had vulnerability and sharing. We had fun. We learned a bunch from the scriptures. It was all this amazing stuff. But all throughout it, my toe hurt. And so in the middle of this powerful testimony, I'm listening to this, hearing about God's work, I'm thinking, man, my toe hurts. And meeting new people and finding out about their amazing life stories and enjoying their company, I'm thinking, my toe hurts. Because this is what pain does. Pain has a way of blinding us to everything else that's going on, so all we can see is the pain. And I think this is a feature, not a bug, actually. I think God designed it this way because there are some things that you have to have pain. You need to stop everything and focus on the pain. That's kind of, there are times where that's absolutely necessary. But other times when we suffer, we can't see anything else. And I think this is where Job finds himself, wishing away all of his life because of what he was suffering. And I think in his exaggeration, we hear actually a bit of the answer to his question, because we realize, well, Job, you wouldn't really want to trade everything to escape this moment, painful though it may be, because we know that there was beauty and joy and love in his life. But we also realize that there's no loss without love. And in the depths of his cry, we see the love he had for the people in his life. And so when we're suffering, it's hard to keep our pain in context. We can't see anything but it. But when we're able to accept our story and say, this is the story God has given me, and this is what is, and it is good, even if it doesn't seem that way right now, then we're able to look at our pain and say, this pain is part of it, but it is not the whole thing. It is not all there is. And that's what's so tempting when we are suffering, to think that the pain I'm experiencing is all there is. But when we realize that it isn't, we can put pain in perspective. I was talking with a friend of mine several years ago who had recently graduated medical school, and he said, if I had known what medical school was going to be like and how hard it was going to be, I wouldn't have done it. Just too much work is just too hard. Some of you are nodding your heads. You've been to medical school. But he said, now that I've done it, I'm thankful that I did. And I thought about that over the years and thought, that's true for a lot of life. That if we knew beforehand what our lives would be like and how hard they would be, we may not choose to do them. We may not choose those paths. And yet, consider God, who knows it all, and consider that he knows all of the suffering in the world, that he knew everything that would happen, that he heard in advance the cry of every person in pain, and yet he still chooses to write the story. In some ways, that's unthinkable, that God would be willing to write a story that is so dark and has so much suffering. Imagine if we could assemble a giant cosmic scale. You know, one of those brass scales with two things and you balance on either end. And imagine on one end that we would pile up all of the pain across history in the entire world. Every person who has been oppressed, every innocent person killed, all the oppression, all the genocide, all the hatred, all the wars, all the mothers who lost their babies and the fathers who lost the children, all the children who were abused, all the untimely deaths, everything, all the evil, we were to pile it up on this side of the scale. Imagine that weight. It is unthinkable how much weight would be on that side of the scale. It would just crush to the ground. And some people stop there and they say, because of that, I can't believe in a God who would allow that. I can't believe in a God who would write a story with all of that in it. It's unimaginable, and I'm sympathetic because that is incredible. And yet, if we believe what we believe, and if these scriptures that we have received are true, then the question we have to ask is, what is on the other side? What could possibly balance that? And we have to believe, because we are told, that that is a glory beyond comprehension, beyond all the suffering, that ultimately God thought this story was worth it, even with all the hurt that it involves. As we follow Job's story, we're going to get little hints of what is on that other side of the scale. We're going to see pieces of it. We're not going to see the whole thing. It's not going to be a focus, but we're going to see Job hanging in there, and we're going to see him persevering, and we're going to see him eventually get to something that is part of that, this depth of relationship with the Creator that is part of the glory that we believe is counteracting the pain in the world. And so what we will discover is that we might have a new appreciation for that glory. When we are honest with the suffering, we can be honest with what God achieves through it. And so we've come to this place where we can accept our story, and we've put our pain in perspective within our story, and we've acknowledged that there is something else besides the pain, but then we're still left with walking through it. And so as we get to the last of this Job's three sections, we're going to see him in what I think is one of his most raw moments, one of his most honest places. This is verses 24 to 26. Job says, "For my sighing comes instead of my bread, and my groanings are poured out like water. For the thing that I fear comes upon me, and what I dread befalls me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, but trouble comes." And now we hear Job's words. They're not dressed up in the form of a curse. They're not exaggerated with this lament about dying as a stillborn. He's simply pouring out his pain. And we hear some of these words recur, the rest and the ease and the trouble that he longed for so much that he wished he died at birth. This is where he's at. He's just not at rest. He's not at ease. He's having these physical symptoms. His sighings are like groanings. But I think the most haunting phrase is the one in the middle to me, where he says, "The thing that I fear comes upon me. What I dread befalls me." And we realize that what has happened to Job is not an arbitrary sequence of events. It's not some random difficulty that he's facing. But what Job is facing is the thing that he feared more than anything in life. His worst nightmare has come true. We read earlier that Job used to give offerings for his children just in case something they did displeased God. And we recognize the heart of a parent there. Those of you that are parents know that losing your children is one of the worst things you could imagine, and the things that we do as parents just in case something bad might happen would fill up most of our time. And yet, even though he took these steps to care for his children, to protect them, the worst thing happened, and he lost all of them in one day. Again, this helps us to put what Job is experiencing in perspective for us, to realize that this is what kept him up at night. He was worried about this. He feared this, and then it happened. And so it's an example for us to be honest with our pain, to articulate and to realize that as hard as it is, when we're able to say that, we're able to say, this thing that's happened is as bad as I can imagine. It's the thing that I grew up fearing. Then just the articulation of that, the expression of that, gives us some freedom because we're able to be honest with what we are facing. And so what we see here is an example for us that when we suffer, we have to express our pain. We have to give voice to it. And when we do that, something powerful happens. Some of you, I know, have seen your worst fears come true. I've talked with you. I've walked with some of you through things you never thought you'd face. And it's incredibly painful. And there are no answers, and there's no comfort, but there is a camaraderie. There is something powerful when you're able to share it and walk alongside it with someone else, with each other, and with the Lord. I have this distinct memory of sitting in this room during college. I was a college student. I started coming here my freshman year of college, and I remember sitting kind of in this vicinity, kind of near where Steve is sitting right now, and I remember sitting right there and having this very specific thought. I was probably 20, 21 years old, and I thought, I haven't suffered very much, is what I thought. And I wondered, I wonder if my faith will survive if I suffer. I had that question. And I realized my life had been fairly well protected. I'd grown up with a stable family, and I was going to grade school and living in Palo Alto, and things were great, and I hadn't suffered. And I thought, I wonder if I'll still follow Jesus if I do suffer. Well, now, some number of years later, you know, 2 or 3 years later, I've suffered. Not as much as some, certainly not as much as Job, but my story has been harder than I ever thought it would be. And I faced hard things that I never thought I'd encounter. Dark moments that make me relate to Job, even in his dark cries. But what I found is that the question has been completely changed. That instead of asking, will my faith survive if I suffer, I ask, how would I have ever survived if not for my faith? Because I can't imagine facing what I've faced without Christ. I can't imagine going through some of the hard things I've experienced without this community, without people to walk alongside me, without Jesus literally walking by my side through it. It's unthinkable. So my faith hasn't just survived suffering. My faith has been formed by the pain that I've experienced. And so here's the truth. You might face your worst fears. That might be part of your story. The worst thing you could imagine might happen to you. There are no promises for an easy path. And yet, even if that happens, you will not be destroyed. You will not disappear. You will not fall down a pit, never to be found again. You will be okay because of God in your life, that you can walk through that as we've seen Job do that. There is hope, even when your worst fears are realized. If nothing else, we can hang on to that. It's not a naive hope. It's not a simplistic hope. It's not a childish wish. It is a belief in the goodness of God because we see tastes of it. Because we see the tastes of a good life. We see beauty and love and sacrifice, and we know that what is on this scale is worth it, even in the darkest nights. When we suffer, everything changes. Everything looks different. It's all we can see. I think of that first week when we lost Mira, and what a small taste of suffering that was, but how painful it was. It's almost all I could think about. Some of you have faced real grief. You know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, you will. You will face hard things. And it's okay to be in pain. It's okay even to be where Job is. It's okay to curse the day of your birth. It's okay to cry out. It's okay to wonder why you were ever born. It's okay to ask God why. It's okay to bring all of your pain and all of your emotion before God, because that's who He is. He can handle it. There are no rules for how to grieve. There's simply being where you are and bringing that before God and trusting that He's there. But we can get to a place of accepting our stories, of being honest with what we've been through. We can put our pain in perspective and recognize that as hard as that pain is, it's not the only thing. And we can express it. We can talk about it, give voice to it. And we can invite others to walk through it with us. I want to invite the band to come back up. And we're going to give you a few minutes now just to process some of this. A few minutes with some quiet music to pray. Maybe you need to invite Jesus into something that you're going through. Maybe you've been denying it, that you've been pushing stuff away and things are harder than you admit and you just don't want to deal with it and you need to say, God, this is what's happening and it's hard. Maybe you're not suffering, but you know that you will at some point and you want to ask God to prepare you now for that, and that's a great prayer. Whatever it is, spend some time with Jesus now. I'll open us in prayer, we'll give you a couple minutes, and then Steve will come up to lead us to the table. Father, We're so grateful for this story. As hard as it is to read, it's such a privilege to see a man in so much pain and to be invited into his heart, to be able to see what he feels, to know that it is something akin to what we have felt and to what we will feel, but to know that you are there throughout it. I pray now for this time that you would give us space, that you would be speaking to us and listening to us as you lead us in responding, however it is you might desire.